than just a woman. Help me to believe in what I could be and all that I am. Show me the stairway I have to climb. Lord, for my sake, teach me to take one day at a time. One day at a time, sweet Jesus, that's all I'm asking from you. Just give me the strength to do every day what I have to do. Yesterday's gone, sweet Jesus, and tomorrow may never be mine. Lord, help me today, show me the way one day at a time. Do you remember when you walked among men? Jesus, you know, if you're looking below, it's worse now than then. Pushing and shoving and clouds in my mind. Lord, for my sake, teach me to take one day at a time.
Two songs, one common voice, with 10 years between the recordings. And what a difference 10 years can make to a young girl. To close the decade of the 60s, 10 years ago this very month, I presented a documentary programme on what we called the itinerant problem. Now, 10 years later, our programme is called How Far Have They Travelled? In other words, what changes have 10 years, the 10 years of the 70s, brought to those selfsame travellers to whom we spoke in 1969? 69 was the year of the Tigheen, the little house which had a roof and a lavatory. The possibility of settlement for the travellers was in the air. Sites offering shelter and a space for a horse, maybe, and some scrap, were becoming available. Localities were inviting the travellers to settle, to come in off the cruel road. That was the hope offered, and it was grasped at. Was Mary Donovan, in Finglas, 10 years ago, going to do up, as they say, her little bare Tigheen?
Yes, we are. Mm-hmm. You know, getting in beds be degrees, and we'll try and fix it up, you know. Mm-hmm. It looks shabby looking at when you come in, but when everything is fixed up, it'll be nice, you know. Mm-hmm. I like to have it as clean and as good looking as anyone else, you know.
Yeah.
Live neighbourly and clean.
What would you like your children to do when they... when they, you know, leave school?
Well, I'd like some of them to get jobs, mm-hmm. you know, and work out then for themselves.
Yeah.
And rear them up very nice and mm-hmm. read and write.
Yeah.
The interviewer there was Kieran Sheedy. Last week I went in search of the Donovan family, and I found them. Not in the Tigheen, of which they were so proud 10 years ago, but in a caravan on the side of the road, on a lonely road in North County Dublin. Their only neighbours, the seagulls, flying around a local county council dump. Before I could go to talk to the family in the caravan, one of the sons whom I met on the road, happy and laughing, insisted that I come with him to see his horses, which he had in a field, frost encrusted, crispy under one's feet, the sun shining, and he was free and open and apparently much happier than when I had met him in the Tigheen years ago. And when I did meet Mrs. Donovan in her caravan, I put it to her, how did life in her Tigheen work out?
Well, it worked out all right, like, for a while, like, you know. But I didn't like it so much. I rid of a house. Because it was very small for a big family. You know, why I didn't like it, because the toilets and all was near together. Know what I mean?
And it was very hard to keep a family, was it?
It was very hard to keep a family, because the bedroom, you're sleeping, eating and drinking in the one place. And that's why I did not like it.
So you preferred to be out...
I'd rather be out in a caravan. It was just as good to be in a caravan. Mm-hmm. Now, that's right.
And your family has grown a good bit since the last time.
Yes, they have. The youngest now, he's 4. Michael.
And I remember talking to your daughter Eileen 10 years ago, and she was learning to read and write and going to school at that time.
That's right.
How far through the school did she go?
Well, she went the whole time, up the whole 10 years. And then Brendan went, and Paddy went, and Jim and Martin. And then from that then up, the rest of them went then. Johnny, Paul, and Mary?
And me.
And Dan.
And me.
Well, Mary is going to St. Cairns. She's going to Ballymun. St. Cairns. And the rest of them is going to, what's the name of that school, Dan? St. Joseph. That's the Marcus Kappa house.
What prospect do you have of getting a house, Mrs. Donovan?
Well, I don't know yet. I'd like to get a house, an end house, if I could, like, you know, that you could do a bit of work on. But I'd rather have that now.
Yes, I remember you telling me 10 years ago that what you liked about the Tegeen most was the fact that you had your own water.
Yes, well, I would. Well, you do. Well, of course, there was no bats in it. You know, and you'd need a bat for children, like, for to wash them and keep them clean when they're going to school. Keep them the best way you can, like.
Has going to school helped the children anyway?
Well, it does, because later on they'll need that bit of education. But what we didn't get, what they needed on now from the facts, the way of facts of life, they're learning everything, like. But we never got the chance of doing that. And I wish to God I'd get it. And maybe I'd be better off the way I am today.
So a roof was not enough, but school certainly did help. As I said, settlement was in the air 10 years ago. Michael Ryan, who worked and who still works with the Travellers in Druidhnure, County Kildare.
They have been travelling the roads a long, long time, and that the first great itinerant movement started during the Cromwellian era. And the next great move of those people onto the roads, and that was during the famine times. And they have been with us ever since. And unless this movement, of which I am a part, is successful, they will continue to be with us. But I am hopeful that the itinerant settlement movement as such throughout the country will gain impetus, and that we will succeed in settling the majority of those families within the next decade at least.
Within the next decade? Today, I wonder, what are Michael Ryan's views?
And I'm afraid that I was possibly a bit over-optimistic 10 years ago, but I was still nevertheless hopeful at that particular period. But I must say that during the 10 years, that reasonable achievement has been made in this particular area of settlement, and quite a large number of itinerant families have been settled all over the country.
Have these families, as far as you know, remained settled?
Well, a fairly high percentage of them have remained, but as you would expect from this type of people, and that a small percentage have left, and it's unlikely that that percentage will ever be settled.
Does this small group that will never settle have particular difficulties, or are they particular kinds of people?
Oh, there are particular kinds of people in this particular category, and that, and you must appreciate that with dealing with this type of people, and that you're taking them from one environment to a completely strange environment, something that they haven't been accustomed to. After all, with ourselves, if we are removed from one environment and pitchforked into another, even with our own backgrounds and that education, what have you, and that we get it difficult at times to sort of settle in a strange environment, the same works with the itinerants.
I remember 10 years ago, the itinerants were mainly making their living from the selling of scrap. They'd come from the dealing in horses. Has the economic way of life of the itinerant changed very greatly over the last 10 years?
Well, there has been a massive change in that particular area. And the change is so great that I would consider at this juncture that there are three grades of itinerants now in this country. The grade that I would consider that are in the affluent society, the middle grade, and, if you like, more or less the destitute. And there are quite a large number in the affluent society and that, and these had been scrap dealers and horse dealers, and that but they graduated to sort of a more lucrative grade of commerce and that, and these people, many of them, have been highly successful in that particular field.
Are you referring perhaps to some of the people we see on the side of the road selling consumer goods like carpets and radios and televisions?
Oh yes, those are the people that I'm referring to in that, and you will notice with this particular type of itinerant and that they set up their sales area in a particular area today, and that the market is fairly lucrative there, and they hear of someplace else in some other part of the island that it is more lucrative tomorrow, and they're there tomorrow. So it is fairly difficult to keep track on those type of people, but they are, at this stage, many of those very professional businessmen.
Are you suggesting, though, that by reason of the very way they live, that they will never settle?
I'm suggesting that while their business is as good now and has been over the past 3 to 4 years, that it will be extraordinarily difficult to settle them. You will understand and appreciate that many of those are driving very high-power cars and have very, very modern wagonettes or, if you like, mobile homes attached and that, and I mean, they're quite comfortable. And while they live in this particular manner, it's going to be difficult to settle them. Although I will say that I know of quite a few of those people that have settled of their own volition.
What is the relationship between the very well-to-do itinerant, as we've now just been speaking of, and the people you would call destitute? Supposing they belong to the same clan, do they relate in the same inter-family way as they used to?
Oh, no way. As a matter of fact, in this particular area of endeavour with those people and that, the well-to-do ones at the moment are inclined to exploit the destitute, and that has been the pattern. I think it has been even the pattern, I said, in our own section of society, but more so in the itinerant people, and that the well-off and that they're always prepared and willing to make the fast buck where it can be made.
Even off their own people?
Even off their own people.
Now, the middle group, the 50% of them who are reasonably well-off in the sense that they're not destitute, at least, how do you see them faring from the point of view of settling or wanting to settle?
I would consider that in this particular grouping of the itinerants, and that is where your greatest prospect of settlement lies, and that, because many of those have already graduated, if you like, from the destitute area, and that they have moved up a peg or two and that, and they have now become that little better off, and that they have a better caravan or they have a better way of living and that, and sort of they're beginning to appreciate, if you like, the goodies of life, what they didn't up to now and that. Now there is a very, very good chance of settlement of many of those particular people. And in this particular regard, I would like to say that where the mother of a particular family, and that where she is definitely, the mothers, in my view, are the bosses in the family, no matter what we in the settled end of the community might think. And if the mother is anxious to settle, whether the husband likes it or not, that family will be settled, ultimately settled, if the mother makes up her mind that she is going to get off the road. Off the road she'll get.
I wasn't able to talk to any of those well-off travellers to whom Michael Ryan made reference. But one person I did find, another inhabitant of a Tigheen in 1969, Mrs. James Hanrahan.
Well, I'm 33 years married, and ever since that I'm still around County Dublin, never travelled much.
So you've been, for 33 years more or less, in the one area?
Yes.
Still travelling around?
Yes.
And after 33 years, you think you have a claim on the place?
Well, I suppose I should.
So County Dublin is your home?
County Dublin is my home, yes.
And now that you're settling down here, you don't feel that there's very much of a change?
No, of course, no. Sure, I mean, still in the one area, let me say.
And do you like to settle?
I love to settle, so yes.
Why?
Well, for the certain reason of educating the girls, you know, and the last two I have, which the others didn't get a chance to do. And I hope to bring up those two well, anyway.
Well, you brought up the others well, too, from
what
I could
see. Well,
they
were, of course, but still they had no education, you know. Although they got good jobs without education.
Now that you're off the road, put it that way, do you find life in the Tigheen?
I think it's marvellous, sir. It's marvellous, sir. It's every attention for a second, you know. And no doubt about it, the government and everything is very good to the nuns, priests and everyone. It's very kind of good to us.
But do you think that there'll ever come a day when you feel like going back on the road?
No, sir, never, please God.
I found Mrs. Hanrahan and her family, or at least some of it, not in a Tigheen, not in a house, between a caravan on the side of the road. The caravan was parked in the middle of half a dozen or so other caravans, all belonging to the same family, the same clan, all relations. A united community, in fact. Mrs. Hanrahan was in bed. She had suffered a stroke, but still she was as cheerful as ever. I asked her about her life in the Tigheen. Was she happy there? And she said the neighbours had been the problem.
Then we had bad company around us. We couldn't stand it, you know. There were awkward people who had us around us, and how would you stay? You couldn't.
That, I suppose, is one of the big problems of moving into the
house, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, if you're left happy, you'll be all right. But when you're bad neighbours, you can't. That's why we left it.
So you moved out?
We moved out, and we went over here to Carra Park. And we were there for a few months. We left it again. So we're here now in the caravan again.
And you're happier in the caravan?
Well, I am, sir. But I was in hospital, and I had to come out. I couldn't rest in it. I know I could stay in a hospital, and I wouldn't stay in them. I'd sooner die in the road.
I suppose the real reason is that the caravan is your own place.
Tis, that's true, sir, yeah.
And you can make your own neighbours.
Indeed you can, that's the truth. Yeah.
I remember we were talking about your daughters. You were particularly interested in the daughters at
the
time. They were beginning to go to school.
That's right. I got a good few months school in that care park.
And how have they fared since?
Oh, there's one of them can read and write now, and she's not so bad. She can do a little, but the other one is a good scholar.
Yeah. What's her name?
Margaret.
Margaret. And we'll have a word with Margaret in a minute.
But, the other one is not too bad. No. She can write letters over to England to her brothers, like, you know.
Yes. You had 10 children that time, I remember. Most of the big boys were in England.
And they're all away in England still. They're
still in England.
I've only one here now already.
Yeah.
So,
and
all married away.
Have you seen any changes in the 10 years in the traveller's condition?
I got it.
Have they got better or have they got worse?
Oh, they got better.
Got better.
Oh, a lot
in
better.
In what way?
In every way. Comfort and, you know, and some of them nice in a manner now, what they were, you know. You could talk to them, but they were uncivilized that time.
What has helped to civilize them, to use your own word? Was it school or money or...?
I don't know. Well, yes, school, I suppose, done a good part of it for the young ones.
Mm.
So they're a bit better now. You can talk to them now, but one thing you couldn't, you know, some of the people, you know. Even some of my own. The grandmother, not together.
So even though you are in bed and have had a stroke, you still think that life is better after the 10 years?
Well, yes. I don't regret it now, thank God. I do be lonesome lying all day in and day out, you know. I don't go any places. But I drinks me pint. Day in and day out. I haven't there for after dinner.
A healthy thing to do.
Well, I don't know. I don't help it either. Still, I can't do it. I likes it. It'd bring me from death to life once, and I still drink it. I was told years ago to take a bottle of stout any time I could get it from the doctor, so I do. And I still drink for it. It makes me sleep.
I suppose the difference between the 10 years now is that you can afford the bottle of stout now and then.
Yeah, but you couldn't afford it that time.
Yes.
Times is better now. I think there's more store of money through the country, like, you know. If you're selling an old thing, well, you'll sell something, you know, but that time people hadn't the price of it.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Are most of your family trading?
Oh, yes. Oh, they're
dealing?
They're all tarmac addicts over there.
Ah, yeah. On the road.
Yes.
Yeah.
They do their own tarmac addicts, you know. But they're doing well.
How often do they come home to see you?
Well, I had two of them home here a couple of months ago, two boys. I suppose there'll be a lot of them home today for this funeral, you know.
Yes. You have a funeral next door in the caravan. At least the person is coming back from England.
From London, yes.
Yeah. Is a funeral a big occasion for the travellers?
Oh, yes. And they died in Australia. They have to come back to their own place.
And every family has its own burial ground?
Oh, yes. Different parts of the country, you know. All belong. Remember the old man you were talking that time? Well,
I do, yes.
He was buried in Drogheda. That was my father.
Your father, that's right. He
died at 95 that time. He died. I think it was.
Did he die in
Finglas? Died on the road, yeah.
On the road?
In the camp, yeah.
Yeah.
He didn't never was sick in his life. So he died on the road. He wouldn't go to hospital anyway. Just the old ticker went down. He couldn't hold it no longer.
Yeah.
It wouldn't wait no longer for him.
So do you see any prospect now after the 10 years of the travellers ever settling, or do you really think that they're happier on the road?
Well, I suppose what you're used to won't sick you. Hmm. You're bred, born and reared on the road is hard to get off of too. Yeah. Isn't it?
It is.
But I don't know. I would like to settle in. I've had part of my own people like in the one place, you know, and no strangers were arguing and fighting. I don't like that.
And that's what happened down in the Tiggins?
Well, no. But, you see, there's different sorts of people. There's a few of them people dead too since you were there.
Really?
Joyce's eye. Yeah.
Oh, yes, I remember.
Old John Joyce, he died.
Oh, it's one request I like from you. It's now before I die. Bring back me old bones, oh, to Ireland, me boys, and bury them in the clay, and write it down in me tombstone, me land, for everyone pass by, that I die quite broken-hearted, me land, for me bonny bold Irish boy.
They may have no place to settle in until the end of the road comes, and then they're very sure of where they want to settle with their own people. It's a question of culture. It's a question of education, particularly, of schooling. 10 years ago, Sister Veronica of the Holy Family Convent in Druidnua.
Well, it's quite simple, really. We just started the very foundation, and with the use of pictures and their own handwriting and drawings and little handwork, we get into the use of letters and words. And then gradually they become interested when they can see that they can write down what they see. So then we make sentences and tell stories, and from that way go on then to book reading.
Mm-hmm. You concentrate on reading at the start?
Well, it is mostly handwork with reading attached. And then by degrees then, when they get in to know, when they have a certain vocabulary, it's quite easy for them to get into the way of writing little stories on their own and that. And then we have picture books, and they go on to normal reading after about 2 months. And they're quite interested, more interested now than I'd ever seen the ordinary school-going child that started at the age of 4.
Why do you think this is?
Well, it's really a novelty to them, and they feel a kind of an achievement to be able to write down or to read what they see. And when they see packets coming from the shops or notices written here or there, they come in and they want to know, what does this spell? What does so-and-so spell? You know, and they're quite, the next day then they'll come with more and more words. What does this spell? And after a while, they can really get on their own, and they're very intelligent. And there's very little, I'd say very little trouble from the ordinary child that comes in at that age if they're allowed to come to school like the present children we have. Mm-hmm. There's no trouble.
Sister Veronica may be long retired from formal teaching in her school. She's now a great age. And I asked her the other day what changes she had seen over the last 10 years.
Well, there's a great awareness of what they have a great desire to learn, the children have, and they appreciate it. And once they start learning, they're really mean to keep on. But then the parents come in. The parents are the greatest trouble of all. They take them off, and then the cycle is broken. But on the whole, there are several families during those 10 years that can read and write, and they have a better outlook on things, and they have a greater appreciation of being, of settling down. And that is about the sum total, that there is really an advancement on their outlook, and the children like the learning. And on the whole, the parents have cooperated. They have sent them to school.
Do you think
with your experience now, that the school is the blessed place to teach the children how to read and write?
Well, there are two answers to this. The school will do, the ordinary school will do, if the children that come in off the road are placed in a lower standard. In the very start, the infant standard. Now, if they feel awkward in that, if they're too old, well, I would recommend that the children, through justice, would be given an hour a day, 1 hour a day. They're usually very quick to learn. Give them an hour a day of private tuition. And within 6 months, they can really go into the school and take up with the classes. But I look at it as a great injustice to see travelling children, no matter what age they are, placed in the ordinary school classes. It's frustrating for the children, and they realise that they're passed over. They can't keep up. They're ignored. Now, that is really the biggest point that I could see about the teaching of travelling children. Take them privately, or else put them in a lower standard, the very start.
You wouldn't agree, would you, with a separate school, because, of course, part of learning is to learn to live with the other children in the school and everything else.
Well, I wouldn't agree with separate schooling. No. They're better off, and far better off, to join in with the ordinary settled community children. They're better off. They can pick up more. They're out of their own environment. But what I really mean to say is, don't place them alone all the time. Give them a start alone and then let them join in with the ordinary children.
10 years ago, Eileen, you sang Away in the Manger.
Yeah, that's right.
Do you remember the song now?
No, I don't remember it.
Your brothers and sisters, I think, are better singers than you are at the moment, aren't they?
Yeah.
Yeah. How did you like going to school?
It was all right.
All right, only, was that?
Yeah. It was nice, like, going to school.
Did it help you in any way if you were thinking about, say, going for a job or working or anything like that?
It did. It learned me a lot of lessons, you know, working and all. Because I was working.
You have been working?
Yeah.
You're not working at the moment?
No, not working.
What chance have you have of a job?
I take a job now if I got one.
What did you work at?
A sewing machine.
In a factory?
Yeah.
And how long did that last?
I was a year and a half working there.
And why did you leave?
Well, the money was too low. Like.
Money was too low?
Yes.
Were they giving you low money because you were a traveller, or were they giving everybody low money?
Well, no, most girls like got more money than what I did. No.
Was there any reason for that?
It was supposed to one reason and it was supposed to one reason, you know?
Yeah.
Well, the women was very nice, and you know.
As Eileen said, there were reasons and there weren't reasons. One of the reasons, I think, so far as I could gather, was that it wasn't easy for somebody new to reading to follow the written instructions necessary for a machinist in a factory. Margaret was another young girl whom I met 10 years ago, just beginning to go to school to learn to read and write. She learned the basic skill of reading and writing, didn't like it very much in school, gave it up, and went, as a lot of her people do, begging.
Oh, I gave it up begging 4 years ago. I sell $2 now.
Tell them what you sell.
What do you sell, yes?
I sell continental quilts, blankets, bedspreads. Not belong to us, belong to other people.
Mm. She just
sells. Sell anything I can get. If
what?
I can sell it, if I don't sell it.
I'll see you there, Mary, and I'll come back.
Gives us
where are you going now?
Oh, I give him the best story in the world.
What do you want to be?
I tell him about the breeding the generation drunk me.
So you're selling?
Yeah.
And how are you treated when you come around selling the stuff?
I know a lot of people. They don't mind.
And they trust what you're selling in that
time? Oh, yeah.
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 So just sell them for a penny.
I can leave them there if I want to, and I can come back later on.
Mm.
If they haven't got the money, if the husband's not in, I can leave them there and come back and collect. They knows me, going around.
So you're part of the place now, in a sense.
And I have to be in an area around there.
Mm.
this morning. I come around here.
You never thought of getting a job or going working in...
I did. I was getting a job before. And when I fell in the farm, the woman wouldn't let me get the job.
Why not?
She tore up the farm. It said, I knew how to read some of the boxes, but not packing boxes of chocolate. You got to know all the names, you know, labels to stick on the boxes. Which at that time I didn't know. So it tore up my farm.
And have you got better at the reading since?
Yeah. Not much, but better than what I was. Anyway, I never learned nothing in school. Whatever I learned, I learned off television.
You learned off television?
Yeah. See, when advertisements come on, well, the people read it first, and then the next time I know how to read, and then I know the words. After that.
While speaking to Margaret about her schooling, about learning to read from television, inevitably the subject of television came up and a discussion started about a film which both RTE and the BBC had just recently transmitted. The film called Katie, about an itinerant child abandoned by her father, her mother sick. The travelling children were most critical of that view as presented by that film of the itinerant way of life.
A travelling child would break the heart after, but they didn't even cry there. So that was one thing I didn't like about that. I loved it, liked it every part of it, because a travelling child won't do that. I don't think they could be held down when the mother part like that. No, they wouldn't go like that. They'd never go like that. I knew they were dating.
And anyways, the way they put it out, every father is supposed to do that, you know? And every father's not like that.
No.
You know, off drinking and spend the money.
No.
For drinking.
Yeah, it was very strange that the father went away and left them without saying where he was going or without kind of keeping in touch with the family, you know?
It's not like that, no. It's not a bit like the Travers, no. Travers, some of them
wouldn't. I know, the birthday. No, that's where the party's birthday is. Wouldn't have it like that. They wouldn't like that, sure. I meant to say that's the last thing I had to think of as a child.
But she was great.
Yeah, she was.
She was great.
Nice, good.
And did you say?
But you hadn't got very many words to say in it.
No.
Very small words to say in it.
But she was very real.
She was.
She wasn't real enough, though. Not where the grave was, or at where the police came in. Because it won't stand for that when they were putting out the fire. Where they put out the fire.
They
wouldn't, because not one of them children ever talked or never said nothing. But a travelling child will. They'll ask them why they don't know for. Why should they do it? Why did they do it? So look, remember the time the woman was buried and the chiller was there? Well, it took big people to howl them chillers.
I didn't understand the word.
With the crying?
Yeah, the big people had a howl and they nearly died and the mother died.
Yeah.
She was a young woman, 24.
Yeah.
And she had five children, four boys and one little girl. Bigger than them there, and it took big people to hold them back from where the mother was going down.
Once I had a mother, and she was kind to me. And at times, his eyes in trouble, she sipped me a pan honey. One night, as I was sleeping upon my feather bed, an angel came from heaven and thought my mom was dead. I woke up really next morning and see it was the truth. Oh yes, my mom had gone to heaven above the sky so blue. Now children, children, pardon, do what you be taught. Any time you lose your mother, you lose your heart of gold.
While speaking to the Hanrahans in their caravan, the sound of a very fastly driven motor car came to us through the window, and there was a crash of something falling off the car or lorry, it appeared to me. I said to the people in the caravan, something has fallen off a lorry, and they ran to the window and looked out. They turned around and they said, no, sir, it was thrown off. The fact of the matter was that a member of the settled community had driven his car at great speed down the road where the caravans were parked, and as he passed the caravans, had opened the rear door of his motor car and thrown out a large carton full of rubbish and bottles and glass onto the road. It was as easy to dump it at the itinerant site as go the extra few miles, perhaps, to the county council tip head. Now, the last interview, which we did 10 years ago for our programme on the itinerants, was with a young girl of 22, seated on the steps of a house in Stephen's Green on a cold, dark winter's night. Her name was Mary, and I asked her, I well remember, where was home to her?
Blackrock.
What is home like?
Well, it's just a camp on the ground. That's
on the ground? Yes. What's it like these cold nights?
Oh, well, it's very cold, you know, to be out.
And when you left home at 3 o'clock, and you came in here to Stephen's Green in Dublin, how did you come in?
On the bus.
On the bus. And then what did you begin to do?
Start begging.
And what kind of a reception did you get on a cold day like this?
Well, a lot of people passed me by, you know what I mean? And just an odd person stood, you know, to give me maybe sixpence or a shilling.
And would you make enough today to buy enough food for today?
Well, I'd say yes. Buy enough of food, but that's all. You know what I mean?
Now, you are 22. You're living in a tent. Living in a tent with whom?
My sister and brother.
And where is your father and mother?
Out in Ballyfermot.
And why did you leave home?
Well, there wasn't enough room there. It was too small.
How much room have you in Ballyfermot?
Well, it's only just, do you know the sites? Mm-hmm. Just a small place, you know, there's only two beds in it.
And how many are in the family?
There's 14.
But when you were living there, did you like living in a house?
Yes, I did. I liked it very much. And I'd like to live now in a house.
So, do you see any chance of getting a house yourself now? You're single, 22, and walking the road, if you like.
No, sir, I don't think so. Or I'd even like a job if I could get it. Something, you know.
What kind of a job would you take if you were given it?
Well, something, you know. I wouldn't mind what kind of a job once I get one. It'd be better than going around, wouldn't it? Begging.
You're all old dirty beggars, dirty old tramps. You shouldn't be on the road. You should be shot years ago. You got too much education.
Why do you think they should be shot years ago, sir?
Yes, well, they're too clever.
That evening, 10 years ago, Mary, a young, reserved girl, was having trouble with the settled community. She's a loner. It wasn't easy to find her after 10 years gap. But chance came my way, and I met her. And when I met her, I asked her if she were still under canvas.
Well, I'm not under canvas, but I would have been, only for the Vincent de Paul, St. Vincent de Paul, in Merrion Road. They bought an old caravan that was half burned for me, and I got it mended up, and I'm in that now.
So that when I met you 10 years ago, you was out in Blackrock, you were living.
Yes, that's
and
right.
And then you were in the Merrion Road. Does that mean that you've been staying in the same area more or less all that time?
Well, I'm, yes, in the south side. Although I'm moved pretty often by the corporation, and I have my children going to school on the south side, and that's my reason for wanting to be on the south side.
So you're fairly settled now at this stage, are you?
Well, as a matter of fact, I should have been ages ago, but I'm unsettled still.
You were out on the Merrion Road, and then you were moved right across the city.
Yes.
To the Finglas area.
Yes, without my knowledge of my caravan, this caravan I have now. I was away getting hospital treatment because I took arthritis last winter from sleeping out with my kids. And I was away getting hospital treatment for my arthritis, and when I came back, the corporation and my caravan gone to a site which I didn't like. There was 100 itinerants, and there was one little toilet, one tap, and you'd have to live in your caravan for £2 a week. And it moved me from Marine Gates, where I had three taps and two public toilets, and where my children could go to school, one going to Bray and the other to St Mary's and Haddington Road.
How are the children getting on since they started to go to school?
Well, they're getting on very well. They like the school very well. And I don't think I get another school that they'd like as much. And that was my main reason for wanting to stay in the south side.
Well, now, between the time we met the last time, 10 years ago, yes, and recently when you were moved by the corporation from that place, how has life been treating you?
It's very bad. Very bad. For the one kind person you will meet, you'll meet a thousand unkind.
Have you been able to get a job at all? I remember you saying that you wouldn't mind having a job if you'd have a roof over your head because of it.
Yes, I'd love a job. But the way I am, that nobody will trust or will take you on to work, you know.
Why do you think that?
Well, I don't think it, but I know it for a fact. There's only one in a thousand that will trust anyone in my position.
You think they'll trust your children more now that they'll know how to read and write and they've been to school?
Well, yes, I think they will, yes. That's one reason why I'd like my children to be educated.
Supposing I met you in 10 years' time now and asked you what had happened to the children, what would you hope for at now, this stage, to happen to the children in the next 10 years?
Well, I'd like them to be educated and get a job here in their own country and not to be having to go across water or to England or any other country to get work. And I think they won't get that unless they're educated, which I can't do. I'm getting ran away from every place that I try to settle in. I'm after being ran out of 10 or 12 places now. And I still have to send my children back to the same schools and buses and anywhere I can get them to it.
But you're back on the south side of the city now?
Yes, I am.
Nearer the schools again?
Yes, I had to pay a person to... My caravan was taken by the corporation while I was in getting hospital treatment. And I had to wait till 2:30 that day, from 11 till 2:30, to find out where my caravan was moved to. So they had it moved to Finglas, and all my pots gone in a corporation lorry, and my clothes, everything I had, taken away in a corporation lorry to be dumped.
And where were the children?
They were at school. So I waited there until the children came back, and then a man told me that my caravan was moved to Finglas. So when I went out and saw that there was so many travelling people in the site, and I don't stay with many travelling people, never. And I didn't like it. And I knew the kids wouldn't get back to their own school that they liked. I got my caravan moved back into the city, and it had to pay £13 to get it moved back. So I'm now in a place where I'm expecting to be run out of again.
Do you remember when you walked among men? Jesus, you know, if you're looking below, it's worse now than then. Pushing and shoving, and clouds in my mind. Lord, for my sake, teach me to take one day at a time.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.